This is KBOO Portland.
Come over here, to the right-hand speaker.
KBOO's book and record sale is happening August 13th at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street, starting at noon. Find treasures amongst the stacks of donated items while raising money for KBOO, your very own community radio station.
Friction between the stylus and the record produces a force which makes the arm try to swing towards the record center.
Again, that's KBOO's book and record sale, Saturday, August 13th from noon to 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm now standing in the center, and my voice should be located precisely midway between the speakers.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, A Letter from Momo, will play Thursday, August 11th at 7 p.m. A Letter to Momo has been described as a Japanese anime Alice in Wonderland. As is so often the case in Japanese animation, displacement and emotional upheaval lead to interaction with the supernatural. Again, that's A Letter from Momo, Thursday, August 11th, at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7. In Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
So welcome to Right to Survive Radio. Tonight's show is about what's going on along the Springwater Corridor and the T1 site. And today my guests is Ray, Desiree, and Austin, James, and Akilah. And so we're going to ask them questions. And please feel free to call in on this live show to voice your opinion or ask questions. And so I'm going to present this question to Ray and Austin. What is going on at the Springwater Corridor, and how are folks finding about the looming sweeps?
Well, there's a lot of things going on at the Springwater Corridor. Ever since the first talk about the sweeps on July 15th, everyone's been feeling pretty anxious out there. There, you know, a lot of high energy, but then also a lot of positive energy. People are really interested in what solutions they have at their own disposal right now and that they can make come together. And there's been a lot of talk about working together with everyone who's living out on the trail to try and figure out what we can't do when we're given such a bad situation.
I also think there's a lot of disappointment on the part of the people on the Springwater Trail. They had been swept from Cartlandia and believed the city when they said that if they were in certain guidelines, they would be allowed to stay until property was made available. But we have found now that's not to be the case. So there's a lot of mistrust on the part of the people towards the city and honestly us outreach groups that gave them the city's word.
Can you let us know what outreach group both of y'all are involved with?
Recarhus, Boots on the Ground PDX.
And I'm Austin. I'm an organizer with Portland Tenants United.
What is your group doing to assist folks that are staying along the Springwater Corridor? And are folks worried that they'll have to move?
Absolutely. People are very anxious about what comes next, right? No one has a place that they know where to go, likely largely because, like Ree was saying, they've been told that they would be able to stay on the Springwater until land was made available for them. So Portland Tenants United got involved because one of the things we do is eviction defense work. And this is a giant eviction of over 500 of our residents of the city of Portland. And in the middle of a housing crisis, that's absolutely unacceptable for the city to be evicting so many of their citizens and our neighbors. And so we stepped up when asked by the residents of the trail who were interested in help defending against their eviction. And we're trying to help them every way we can.
Boots on the ground has been out there on the trail for about a year now. We assisted with the Cartlandia sweep. We helped people move, helped them relocate, get within compliance, and hopefully try to stay within compliance. At this point, I'm at a loss. I'm not willing to participate in any more sweeps. So Boots on the Ground will be occupying territories to put people on for landing spots before the sweep occurs.
And we have other people here in the houseless community, and I would like for them to mention their name and say what has other groups come together to help in this movement.
Yes, I'm Desiree Rose. I live at Hazelnut Grove, an intentional community, what we call a village for homeless people, and we stand with the people on Springwater.
My name's Aikila with Right to Dream 2. I personally have went out and camped out at the Springwater Corridor with the folks to get to know them. I felt very safe, but what was a little alarming was some of the harassment from the folks in the community that... one of them was a child molester, and he was telling a lady there that has three children that he was going to kill her. And, so it's not about the homeless people being bad people. I mean, there's bad in all situations. And so we just need to come together instead of being against each other.
And Austin or Ree, what have you heard out from the folks on Springwater?
Well, the residents, the neighbors of the Springwater Corridor, are rightfully angry at this situation. They've been forgotten, just like the people who are living, experiencing houselessness out on the Springwater Corridor as well. But one of the things that we hear time and time again as me and other members of my organization are walking up and down the trail is that they're constantly having to de-escalate situations when angry neighbors bring things to them. Right. So oftentimes it's not when a situation gets out of hand, it's because someone from the community at large has decided to take it on their own to confront people that they think, not that they've seen, but that they believe to have done something wrong. And especially for people who are already living such a precarious life, it's really easy for them to react in kind. We've also heard stories about neighbors goading residents of the trail and really trying to push their buttons so that then they come at them, right? And so they can spin a story that makes it seem like it's the residents of the trail who are really perpetrating this violence.
And, of course, the flip side of that coin is that we have a bunch of residents in a community that have had been completely inundated by a great fraction of the city's houseless, have had no say in it. This is the same community is probably only two paychecks away from being out there on the Springwater, and this has caused unending aggravation.
So my curiosity is that every time a houseless person or people get together and form their own community and neighborhood, they networking and helping each other. And then people that live in houses see them, and they always throw a negative connotation on them. Who has rights and who don't have rights here in this country?
Well, first of all, a lot of homeowners want to throw around the word taxpayer. I will point out that everybody pays taxes. Every pack of cigarettes, every soda bought, every meal bought has taxes associated with it. Homeowners' taxes do not give you a greater voice in City Hall. They allow you the right to your own little private patch of land. The end. It's nice when people are able to band together in neighborhood associations to help each other out, but at the end of the day, they should not be allowed a larger voice at City Hall. Their voice does not count more.
Also, I think, we're in the process of seeing Portland change really intensely right now. And one of the reactions to that is fear. And I think, you know, both for people who are experiencing homelessness on the Springwater Corridor and the neighbors of Lentz, a lot of the reactions that we're seeing out there are fear-driven because they're not being supported by the city at large, their community at large, or the people in City Hall who are ultimately saying things that are making these things happen.
We have a caller on the line. Can we go to the caller?
Hi, this is Rain Rotolto.
Hi, Rain.
Hi. the thing that I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about is that's kind of getting glossed over is the city knows and has known for months on end that they have a rape corridor, an active rape corridor in the Springwater Corridor, and for the folks that are getting assaulted, there has not been interventive help that should have been in place. There's not support there for that. So when you were talking about taking what little safety some of these folks, predominantly women, have been able to cobble together and mass sweeping people, you're creating an extreme echo trauma situation that I'm greatly worried about.
I agree with that. I mean, that you have people run away from foster care. You have people getting evicted because it's a no-clause eviction. And if your landlord don't like you, they evict you. And so now the neighborhoods who don't understand houselessness, they put in all the negative things like we got people taking advantage of women, we got alcoholics, we got drug addiction. But you don't never see that inside houses because it's in an enclosed environment, and we on the outside, and we do the same thing that people do that live on the inside. So why are they putting us down, saying we just negative, and they look and they putting themselves on a high pedestal? If you have any questions or any answer, call us at 503-231-8187. I leave that question to our guests here. You all can answer it as you want to.
Hey, Rain, it's Ree. I absolutely recognize the need for protection for our women, and it's on again. There's another women's camp. It's popping up. The difference is this time they won't get us off the land without a signed use agreement.
Well, the other thing I guess I want to say, because prior to everyone deciding these are the popular kids or whatever, I've been the advocate in the street every single day for like 3 years working with this population. So I don't think anyone has the street time or knowledge of this actual group that I do. So I come at it from a little bit different demographic. And I guess one thing I want to say too is you have a very vulnerable female population here with rape. You also have an incredible amount of older folks with disabilities here. So if there is a conflict and a stand your ground, and this kind of stuff makes me extremely nervous about people actually getting hurt physically, maybe. There are also a small but active population of Native American folks that need some different handling as far as resources go, too. So there it's really a very complex mix of folks on top of the volume of people, the who they actually are individually is a very complex mix that needs service help. That is definitely not there because the only service point in that whole area is Clackamas Service Center, and Clackamas Service Center does not have the staffing or the funding, you know, to really deal with everything that's there. And I think it's fantastic, you know, with that we now have sort of a flood of outreach workers from different agencies finally engaging where they should have been for quite some time ago.
I agree, Rain. Thank you. I think Austin would like to jump in and comment on what you're saying.
Absolutely, Rain. I mean, there are a lot of problems out on the Springwater Corridor, and I think you raised some really good points about what the future of the Springwater Corridor holds. And that's one of the things that, you know, we're working hard to sort of respond to the needs of people out on the trail. And we're, you know, one of the reasons that we got involved was because we heard that there were a lot of people who wanted to make a stand against the police. And we understand that when that happens in a disorganized way, it can be a very dangerous thing. And so we take that very seriously, and we're working to create de-escalation teams. And we really urge the city of Portland to figure out how they can do this in a very compassionate way, because that is, it's a big worry. And we're making every step we can to make sure that it's not happening on our end.
And for those that do not want to stand and that will be traumatized and just want to go, that is the purpose for the landing spots.
And so Desiree and Akilah, I hope I said it right. I know I tell your name up. You all, by being houseless women living on the streets, can you all give y'all form on what happens to women on the streets and what the city is doing and these economic organizations are doing to help women that live on the streets, if they are?
I don't know how they're currently helping women. I know from a long history of homelessness what women have to go through on the streets. I've had to explain this to some men, why women have to shave their heads and wear filthy clothing, even to the point of smelling like urine, in order to protect themselves. I'm a veteran. I don't have to go to that degree. But I stand with my sisters to try to protect them. And people, it pains me that these people who are having all these problems with the Springwater people, they don't want to seem to hold the city more responsible, okay? The filth that everyone's saying that we're filthy, they told those people to collect garbage and then said it would be picked up and it wasn't. So they want us to look filthy. The people that are trying to help us, they want to come against, okay? So when are people going to start requiring accountability and responsibility from the city, because they don't know what these shelters and these programs do and how they wholesalely destroy the poor? You don't know that. It's time to start requiring accountability.
In my opinion, I'm a survivor of rape as a child, and I really don't see a whole lot of services out there for women, survivor women of rape. I mean, when I came here to Portland, there was not all the shelters. The battered women's shelters are full. You got women out there all just crazy in the head because of all their issues, don't even know it, and they're not getting the proper help. They're out there with men, trusting men, getting in bad situations. So are they really getting help? I'd have to say no.
So people want to wonder why people, the houseless community, don't want to go into these shelters. They rather build their own community. And if you do statistically, you can prove that when the houseless community take care of themselves, they more productive than the academic shelters. I don't want to name them by name. I don't think we can do that on the radio. But if you want to check out Hazelnut Grove, Forgotten Rams, Dignity Village, and Right to Dream 2, you can see how those people are more productive when taking care of themselves than going to these shelters. So with the present thing, the mayor just banned the emergency shelter where people can sleep on the sidewalk, and now he's sweeping 500 people. Where are they going to go?
Ree, I want to ask you a little bit about Patchwork across the city. What's going on with them, and what are the neighbors thinking?
Well, Patchwork across the city is what we're calling this, for lack of a prettier term, occupation of Parks and Rec open space. It will be a patchwork across the city. I believe the Lentz neighborhood needs some relief. It's ridiculous that this barely subsistence community has been dumped on with this huge problem. We are planning on doing a patchwork across the entire city, and neighborhoods that have been safe due to their large incomes should not consider themselves safe anymore. In fact, communities that don't want to look at tent cities need to figure out how they're going to come up with money for tiny houses. It's not optional, and the entire city gets to make a sacrifice. Neighborhoods with more money, we're going to be looking at them to be using their resources.
And so, Austin, do you have anything to talk about when we're made promises from the city officials that say, oh, there won't be no more sweeps, and then everybody get comfortable, and all of a sudden they sweeping the people off the street? They have to go somewhere.
They absolutely have to go somewhere. And, you know, one of the things that's been talked about when asking where they are going to go is that they're going to go into neighborhoods, right? And so we're going to likely see a lot more small, disorganized camps of people who don't have necessarily community around them anymore popping up in neighborhoods. But that will also probably be a short-term thing, because the reality is a lot of these people have experience some form of stability that's often lacking in their lives when they're out on the Springwater Corridor. And so I think it's short-sighted of us to think that a sweep is going to stop camping on the Springwater Trail. And likely in a couple months, a lot of these residents are going to be back out there. And so, you know, a sweep is effectively a waste of taxpayers' money when there are real solutions that can be addressed and can be funded with that same money. And so to ignore the needs of the residents of the Springwater Corridor and ignore the needs of the neighbors of Lentz is just a terrible thing that the city can be doing right now in a time that we need real leadership committed to real real problem solving.
And Jane Brazell, you're a member of Right to Dream too, and you have been a member in good standing doing outreach work. And I understand and know that you've been going to different places where houseless people are at. What are the houseless people feeling about the Springwater Corridor, about being moved? What are the people's feeling about neighborhoods bringing the problems on them? And how do you feel about that?
Well, that's a good question. I have a great answer for that. You see, the people on the Springwater Corridor are very unhappy with the unfortunate turn of events happening. They're very comfortable there. They're making a good neighborhood for themselves, good community, good partnerships within each other. And then the city wants to come in and just kind of snatch it all away from them. And understandably, I'd be a little ticked off myself. So what me and some of the people over at Right to Dream 2 did is we went down there, had a little barbecue, a little powwow with them, talked about the issues, tried to get what they wanted to get off their chest overdone at City Hall. Over at City Hall and whatnot. And me personally, I feel like it's a bit of some bull honky. You know, it's not right to be kicking people out like that when they ain't got nowhere to go. There's only so many shelters, there's only so many tent cities out, Right to Dream 2s and Dignity Villages, and we don't have enough to house 500 people that will be swept due to this Springwater Corridor cleanup. The thing that's happening.
Desiree, did you want to add anything? And do you think the sweeps will solve anything with the people on the Springwater?
No. I have over 40 years of being homeless. I've been homeless over the 40 years, and I've lived in 28 states. And I watch the same game happening here that I see everywhere. Chase people around town all day long so you exhaust them, and maybe, if they're lucky, they might get their meal, they might get their bed for the night, while people are getting paid and filling their pockets with money from running these people ragged around town. And if that isn't good enough, ship them out of state while the other states are doing it, and the states can all swap us around. You know what? We're really tired of getting chased all over creation, and you expect us to actually accomplish something under those kind of situations? We've watched the system destroy our families, left our children destroyed, who are now street children, and now you want to destroy our street families who we have come together with for support and help. A lot of us aren't sitting still for it. I wish we could take more into Hazelnut Grove. We have proven that we can be good neighbors. Some of us have been so beat down that we don't know how anymore. But do you expect them to learn while you're chasing them around and cracking them on the back with a whip? It ain't happening.
Okay, 503-231-8187. If you have any questions or answers, please call in. And to cry out now in the houseless community, where do we go?
We have a caller on the line. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing tonight?
Hi, am I on the air? My name is Kevin.
Hi, Kevin, you are on the air.
Good. I want to tell you, I am what is identified as a psychiatric survivor. I have been forced to take psychiatric treatment against my will. And I am part of a movement of folks in North America and Western Europe who identify as people who believe that individuals should have a choice in receiving psychiatric treatment or addiction treatment. I am totally against, I am totally for the idea of supportive shelters that people choose and long-term affordable housing for people that can afford that or that can be sponsored in some way. But I am totally against the idea that shelter beds or housing beds are tied to mandatory psychiatric or alcohol and a drug addiction treatment. I think the two, that every person deserves a bed and a place and a meal, but I don't think that, I think that people should have a choice of whether they want to be treated for mental illness or for addictions, and I think those two issues should be separated. I think the treatment industrial complex has its hands all over the shelter process in Portland, and the peers and receivers of the services have little to say whether they want these services or not. That's my strong feeling about this whole houselessness shelter issue in Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think Right to Survive is all in line with you, as well as everybody in the room here tonight. We strongly agree that we're housing and sheltering people, if they, especially when they don't want to be put into a place, is not the right move. I wanted to ask, because we only have a few minutes left with Ree, what demands are we presenting to the mayor about the spring water evictions?
I'm going to let Austin handle this one because I can't read his handwriting.
So these are demands that were created by residents of the Springwater Corridor in a general assembly that we held with the community at large. And they are interested, they demand that the mayor cancel the sweeps, start a policy of relocation and not displacement. So no sweeps without a place for someone to go. You can't just disperse them into the city, as that creates a whole bunch of trauma in lives that already have a lot of trauma. No stealing of people's possessions. It is law that the city must hold a person's possessions after a sweep for 30 days, but unfortunately that's only something that the city follows some of the time. And so there are a lot of stories, especially recently, of sweeps where all possessions were just thrown right into the dumpster. And so they're demanding that anytime a city official moves a houseless resident that they not steal their possessions.
But
they are also calling for the end to the criminalization of the houseless community, and changing the law to allow interested homeowners to open up their backyards so that houseless residents can pitch a tent there. And then also, the city was said that they were going to deploy storage units before the sweep, but they were actually going to deploy storage units a week after the sweep. And so if any sweep moves through, even if when people are being relocated, there need to be storage units available for them before that relocation time begins.
I know Right to Survive is working on the Right to Rest Act bill with the Homeless Bill of Rights, and we demanding and asking the same thing. So if anybody want to know more about that, call Ibrahim Mubarak at 503-839-9992, and we can get involved, and we'll be doing lobbying in the Senate and the Capitol from September 19th through the 22nd.
Ree, I know you have to go, and you just have a few minutes left. Could you real quickly tell us what happened at the council meeting with the T1 site today?
Well, a little bit of background. Obviously, Homer Williams was attempting to get Terminal 1 for a temporary shelter to be possibly turned into a permanent shelter. That vote did go through today, 3-2. Obviously, a lot of us houseless advocates, in addition to the houseless, have some real issues with this, namely and foremost being the warehousing of people in that hot tin shed, and secondly, the tying of services to counseling, drug, alcohol, or psychiatric.
Thank you, Ree. What did you take out of today's meeting? What was the consensus of people in the room?
Well, I don't know that anyone was in consensus when we walked into that room. We all talked it over, and, you know, at the end of the day, each person can only go by their own heart. I think that we are not surprised to go through. This is how big business operates. They get what they want. They get to go to the front of the line. They get their voices heard. When people that have been working on this project for a year or years get put to the back, I only really hope that the community, meaning the service providers and the actual houseless community, are given a vote and that we aren't forced to protest this a couple of months down the road.
Thank you, Reed, for joining us. We're going to take a quick music break, and then we will be right back.
Yeah, yeah. Let the reality and the toxic douche you take it out, y'all. Mike Grinshaw, Solid Right, Portland to Detroit, indeed. I let the music raise funds for community centers. Start a high school that is soon to be finished. I'm thinking about starting a community garden. Trillions on the war while the poor people are starving. Music is a tool in the hands of the artists. Do the right thing and it makes you a target. When the pigs murder the innocent and walk scot-free, we gotta occupy the property and block the street. I'm in the intersection between love and liberation, indoctrination and occupation. I demand a response to this emergency, so the government is conscious of insurgency. So much work to do, so few jobs to find. The financial sector loots and robs you blind. Politicians and puppets and the Pope protects predators. The paper's propaganda projected by the enemy.
Somebody help me. This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you
might.
Where is your love true?
It might get you.
And what do you think is
suicide, y'all? But we don't change the pain. I'm going in like a shank to the pancreas. I believe in the government with the faith of an atheist. Rebellious, like Chavez in Venezuela. My focus goes far beyond genitalia. Surgical, I go past cervical thresholds from beneath the earth's surface. Surpass UFOs, I thrust to the facade, sequestering God. Plumb to the depths, that's my quest in my job. I'm gonna uproot the implants, dismantle the kickstand.
Okay, thank you for listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And if you have any questions or answers or anything curious, you can call at 503-231-8187. And today we're here with organizers, activists, and members of the houseless community. And so when we went off, we was talking about what happened today, the big day at City Council, with the $100 million graveyard that people were saying, or warehousing that the Pearl District at Terminal 1 want to create for the houseless community. And I'm here with Austin, Jane Bazell, Akilah, and Desiree. If y'all want to talk more about that, what you heard about today at City Council, feel free to add your input. Anyone?
I heard a lot of real opposition to it, knowing full well that they were going to do what they wanted to do anyway, which disgusts me.
So why do you think that every time a houseless community or houseless person want to go into a neighborhood, the neighborhood associations come out and play like they care about us and say, oh, this is not the place. We care about the poor little houseless people, but not in my backyard. They don't care until we go into their neighborhood. Then all of a sudden, they care and they cry. And then they call us all kinds of things that I can't say on the radio, but they know what they call us. We're humans just like them. We was housed before we became houseless, and we took our baggage into the street. The streets didn't land on us. We landed on the streets with our baggage. And the same thing that goes on in the house community goes on in the houseless community. So why do you think they treat us bad and don't want us there?
We're equated with prisons. They don't want us in our neighborhood because we're no better than prisoners. That's the way they look at us, criminals and drug addicts. Not why people might have problems, why their problems are not only not being dealt with properly, but are being capitalized on by programs deliberately meant to destroy them. A lot of our street kids are runaways from the system that deliberately destroys them, that treats them with drugs and truckfuls of psychological abuse. You've destroyed my family. What am I supposed to do now? Did I fall down behind some alcohol? Gee, what would you do? While your children were ripped out of your arms and being told that you just weren't good enough.
I think some of this is just ignorance and lack of knowledge. Some of these people may have never been homeless or been out on the streets with their children trying to struggle to see how they're going to feed them or keep them in a safe environment. And I think maybe educating the community a little bit more, bringing the community with the homeless people together instead of fighting.
They just need to treat us with a little bit of respect and act like we're human beings.
We have a caller, Patricia. Welcome to our show.
Hello, this is Trisha Basler. I have a question. It's actually two parts. I'm concerned about the toxic waste that's been reported at the Reedway site and at Terminal 1. If the city, first of all, has the city cleaned the Reedway site from toxic waste, and has that been retested in order to have people live there? And two, when Terminal 1, if it becomes viable, that will need to be tested for toxic waste, and who will be monitoring that above as city leaders?
Well, as far as we know, the Terminal 1 site is part of the Superfund site, and it has been deemed by the EPA that it is a viable piece of property to put industrial businesses, manufacturers on. However, I don't see how that even equates to being habitable for humans to be living on. We haven't heard anything more that the ratings have changed. And I'm sorry, could you repeat the second part of your question again?
Reedway, has the Reedway site been cleaned of toxic waste so people can live on that site? I believe the city had mentioned something about it.
I don't know actually where they are in that process, Tricia, but I did get word that yesterday they posted a 24-hour eviction notice for the few campers that had been camping on the contaminated Reedway site. So at least that to me says that they're starting the work. But considering the city has been using it as what they call a pressure release valve for what happens when the Springwater Trail gets swept, and saying that 100 of those people are going to be able to go to the Reedway site, I think it's pretty unlikely that in 3 weeks' time they're going to be able to remediate a whole bunch of pollution that's been brought out of the Johnson Creek in the last several years.
And I do know today at City Council that people that was against the houseless community going over there because they say it's toxic. You know, the toxicity is at a high rate. And it seems to me, I've been going through this for over 20 years, that every place a houseless want to go, the neighborhood associate come out and say, hey, that's toxic property. But at the Terminal 1, they let Nike rent it out for a track and field thing. They wanted people to grow vegetables. So what they saying, that the toxic is only toxic for the houseless community, and they growing plants on there. So if they growing vegetables and stuff, they feeding us toxic vegetables. I guess that's a new way of gentrification on getting rid of the houseless community.
It reminds me a lot of the Native American problems, okay? They're calling this, by the way, Oregon's Trail of Hope, which the Native Americans are extremely insulted about, and I don't blame them. But you want to know who understands being put on land that has been poisoned next to poison water while their families are torn apart and they have no choice and no recourse? They know all about that.
Thank you, and we have a caller on line two, Rain. Welcome back, Rain.
Hi. I just wanted to point out one other thing that's a big concern of mine. So this the September 1st sweep timing, so that puts us heading into fall, so that starts the bad weather timing. this would be the largest sweep that's ever been done, okay? And if, and we pretty much think that it'll happen, there is loss of gear for these folks, you know, where for whatever reason the storage locker idea to reality is a different picture, and we end up having to actually re-gear or re-outfit these people, it is going to completely and utterly overwhelm every single service provider that to date, you know, struggles as it is on a normal basis to come up with a tent or a sleeping bag or whatever for any of these people, you know, on a somewhat needed basis. There's no way in the world that we're going to have the resourcing to be able to even begin to handle that. So we're putting, we could potentially be putting people's lives at risk from exposure.
Yes, they are doing that, Rain. I'm glad you brought that up. And today, again, I was at City Council where the Neighborhood Association was there in full force telling us that the land is toxic. And since they don't have no solution on where should we go, maybe they'll allow us to put tents up in their backyard. So since their land is not toxic, we can go in there. But one thing I didn't like was this lady had her 3-year-old come up and whisper in her ear about how she don't like houseless community. So what they doing, they raising people just back like in the 60s, the 50s and stuff to dislike people of color. Now they raising their children to dislike houseless people, and they don't even know us. And I hope in the future that her daughter don't date a houseless man or woman.
Well, one thing that I have pointed out is that every neighborhood has a school building, and these school buildings at night, when you know folks need places to sleep, have toilets, they have cafeterias, they have a gymnasium. If they hired security guards, there's no reason why that couldn't be a place where people could be out of the weather. And I've since had someone point out to me that there's a number of totally empty, non-used school buildings, which I didn't know.
You're right, exactly right. And we at Right to Survive, before we even did Right to Dream 2, was looking at the to go on to school that been closed down, the Washington School on 12th and Stark, to camp out or to turn that into educational and tent city so people can have a good place to go, because they have showers, they have kitchen, they have gymnasium where people can get healthy, and they have different rooms and classrooms where we can re-educate and recycle the mind and get them back productive into society.
Yeah, we definitely, there are lower cost alternatives that could be explored that are not. So I don't know. I'm a former bank project manager, so I'm just looking at all of this going, wow, there's some big, you know, for folks that have this as their business and trade, as their day job, there's some big gaps that are not being explored that should be, that maybe they need to get some different level of consulting type people coming in to the picture. I don't know.
I agree with you on that. School buildings, empty school buildings, are one of my pet things that I'm interested in. Why are these buildings going to waste when they can be used for homeless people in one place where you can get everything you need right there? Because you got a kitchen, you got plenty of places to turn these things into useful facilities for the homeless that they have a say in, so that we can have our social workers come there and work with us, so that we can say what programs we want in with, so that we have some autonomy, and we use property that's already there that's going to waste. Why spend $100 million when with just a little bit of support we could use those buildings?
Well, the other thing is, it's like, as a taxpayer of the city, when you look at your tax bill in Portland, and I know because I paid it for 20-30 years before I moved to Gresham, the highest expense on your tax bill is the school district, and Multnomah County has had long-standing issues with their school system, and they're always wanting more and more and more and more money. So this is a way to build some economy for the school and take care of the homeless people at the same time. But, you know, in the business world,
the more income you can generate from a physical building, that's good revenue.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good fiscal management.
And those buildings are so very usable. They really, mm-hmm. really are.
And I think you bring up a good point, Rain, which is there's no one solution to this problem, right? We need to be really creative in how we approach what the future of housing in Portland looks like, because the ways that and the models that we've been using up to this point are either too expensive or not effective for the people that they're trying to serve. And so we really need to figure out how we can bring the ingenuity and the creativeness that is really the heart of the Portland that I know and love into solving this problem of housing in Portland.
A lot of people that criticize us don't know the first thing about how these things are done. They don't have the faintest idea of what it's like to be in a shelter. It's awful. They don't have any idea of how these programs are run. They don't know that they're run deliberately to destroy people. And then you wonder why you've got all these masses of people wandering around destroyed. You expect them all to straighten up their act and be good citizens right now. Well, after you're done chasing them all around town and beating the hell out of them, I'm sure they'll get right around to that.
I said, hell. Both you and Austin have been part of the BBC, the village building collaboration. Can you tell us, Desiree, what's going on with them and what's the idea behind the Village Coalition?
We're trying to prove that we're showing that we get together as street families. Our families, most of us, have been destroyed, and they have no concept of how street families work. We get together to help each other survive, and because of that, we have an invested interest in each other. We care about each other. We are our own social workers. We work with each other, and we're there to show everybody that we can help ourselves. How dare programs say you're too doggone destroyed for us to work with? Well, we don't believe that, and we believe that street families care about each other, and we want to help each other, and we're incensed that you want to stop us from doing that. You want to destroy us. And we've proven that we can be good neighbors at Hazelnut Grove. Nobody hardly even hears us. We're downhill from a very steep hill. We're pretty quiet. Why people complain about us, I don't understand. But we are learning as a group. We're trying real hard to create a neighborhood and be good citizens and to show that it can be done. It can be done. But you have to give us the chance to work together to help up those of us who are the most injured, to try to come to a place where we're not scared and frightened and terrorized, so we can say, okay, what's next? Next is trying to make our living space a better place to be and to be good neighborhoods in the city. Those things come after we can stop being terrorized.
I haven't been super involved with the Village Building Coalition or Hazelnut Grove, but I try and help out when I can because the project is just so inspirational for me. And largely that's because of the reasons that Desiree was just talking about, which is understanding that the root of the problems that we're having around housing stem much deeper than, you know, just infrastructure. It's often about how we can relate to one another. Right? How people who are, whether they be housed or unhoused, are able to experience the life that we all share. And one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen is every time I go down to Hazelnut Grove, there's always people who are together and they're talking and they're sharing food and they're sharing ideas. And it's clear that they really want to be there with all those people. And that's so inspiring. Coming from people who, you know, with the stories that we hear, have so little, but in reality, they actually have so much. They're very wealthy. They just don't have wealth in the ways that we normally think about it. And also, I think one of the real strengths of the Hazelnut Grove project, why it's been so successful in my mind, is its commitment to self-organization, right? And I know that Right to Dream 2 has also had that commitment. And allowing that self-organization to come forward allows people who understand the realities of what's going on the street to actually come up with the solutions, right? That's my biggest problem with the Terminal One proposal, was that listening to Homer Williams talk or talking to people out on the streets both clearly made it clear to me that no one had included people who have experienced houselessness in the conversation about what Terminal 1 was going to be. And so that meant that everyone I talked to who was sleeping out on the street saw it as a prison. And everyone who talked about it in Portland city meetings thought about it as the solution, that it would end homelessness in Portland. And it's like both of those are absolutely, you know, incorrect, and we need to figure out how to involve the people who are most impacted into this conversation.
That's true, Austin, and I agree with you that nobody have a monopoly on what's right on how to deal with the houseless community, but we got to stop blaming the houseless people as the problem. Mm-hmm. The problem is the problem, and we need to solve that by various different things. And James, how can we help with the people that may be swept from the Springwater Corridor or any other houseless community because the rainy season is ready to come up?
So one of the things that I feel like us as a community in Portland can do, and, you know, I've got this paper in front of me, but I'm going to kind of just speak from the heart here. Go out in your neighborhoods and talk to your houseless people, you know, find out who they are, what their life's been like, and you never know. You might find one that you click with, that y'all talk like y'all have known each other for years, and that could turn into something as like a, hey, every winter when it's raining, come over to my house, come get some food, come get some water, come get some sleep, come get a shower, get out the weather. Because you know what? We started so long ago as people who were meant, built, and made to come together as a community. And you know what? I think everybody in Portland, I think everybody around the world has lost sight of that. We too into our dang Pokemon Go and these smartphones and Facebook and everything. We done forgot how to be people with people. We forgot how to get that connection. And that connection back in the day was what allowed people to knock on somebody's door and ask to borrow a cup of sugar or a cup of ketchup or something. You go to somebody's door and ask to borrow a cup of sugar, now they're going to look at you like you crazy, or they're going to tell you get a job or something else. So you know what? We need to all just come together as a people. Put your cell phone down. Put your tablet down. You know, put that drink down, put that joint down, put whatever you need to put down. Go out to your community, go out to the Springwater Corridor, talk to these people, make friends, and you never know. A lot of us is real, real respectful, and we real nice people, but you gotta give us a chance. You know, you have to give us a chance to be able to take these showers, go to these interviews, provide us with a sleeping bag maybe that you ain't using no more from an old camping family trip way back 3 years ago. Do something for the people instead of just sitting there in City Hall griping and complaining because you don't want us here and you don't want us there and you don't want us anywhere. What it sounds like to me is that you want us to get help, but you want us to get the help that you want us to get. And if we just happen to have any kind of achievement of helping ourselves, oh, it's the wrong type of help. No, you the wrong type of person, and you're using the wrong type of thoughts.
One way you can help out is you can donate any tents, any sleeping bags or jackets to Boots on the Ground. If you're feeling a little spark in your heart and you're just feeling inspired, please do so.
And so there you have it. The houseless community is the real melting pot. You have all kinds of differences in there. And so I think that's what people are afraid of when differences are coming together and fighting for the same common cause. We are a real community. We are our neighborhood. We know what we need to be successful. We know what we need in order to help ourselves. So again, 503-831-8187. You listen to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. We have 6 minutes. Any last words of advice or any concerns that you all, I guess, want to say? You're on.
Well, this is Rain. I want to leave on a positive note. So I want to tell you something. There is a community. It's a very small community, a neighborhood community in Southeast. I won't tell you where. That the folks there that are homeless, that reside in a little park-type area, have worked for a year with the community very closely, to build a relationship of trust with them and acceptance, have went out of their way, completely out of their way to not be a bother to this community, to the point where when I see them, and I've been there multiple times, members of the community come up to them and say, greet them by name, bring them food, kiss them on the cheek, and tell them that they love them. So as a community, we can do much more. And it's possible, maybe not to get to a relationship to that degree, but it's possible that you can get to a place of acceptance and understanding and a place where that friendship is there and they cease to become the homeless and start becoming real people with names and histories and daily needs or just daily joys and triumphs. You know, but it takes some work to get there on both the community's part and on the population that aren't housed.
I'd like to ask the community, do you know how many of us are veterans? Well, at Hazelnut Grove, we have 30 people. Fully one-third of our residents are veterans. We were good enough to go out and fight for freedom and then come home and be told we have no right to freedom. Say what?
I think you bring up some really good points, Rain and Desiree, as well. You know, I'm relatively new to working with the houseless population, and up until July 15th, it had been 10 years since I'd set foot on the Springwater Corridor. But in the last month of walking up and down the Springwater Corridor, one of the things that I've seen is how many beautiful people and beautiful homes exist out there. And one of the reasons I've been invited into a lot of those homes is because I always start with a little bit of compassion. A lot of the people who are out there are people who have been through a lot of trauma, right? And like Desiree was just saying, have been largely forgotten about. And so as people who are housed in this community, if you're interested or on the fence about what's going on and how you can participate, go out there and reach out your hand first. It is our responsibility for those of us who have the privilege of housing right now to take the leadership on this and invite people who are out on the streets to join us to really create positive solutions. Hurling insults is only going to divide us even further, and sweeps will do the same thing. And it's only going to be us coming together and those of us who have that privilege really working to mobilize that coming together that will really do anything here, I believe.
This is a Christian-based country, and I know there's all kinds of different spiritualities here, but I want to quote something from the Christian Bible as what Jesus said. If you feed not one of these, you haven't fed me. If you house not one of these, you haven't housed me. A crime against one of these is a crime against me. So all you people out there who say you avid Christian, you're not reading your Bible or practicing what it says.
And they talk a lot about the programs. I think they really need to look. Again, the city wants us divided, okay? They want to keep the homeless against the housed people. They want that to happen because then you're not going to turn around and look at them. A lot of us are out there because their corrupt programs destroyed us and nobody cared. It's about time somebody cared and start putting eyes on them.
All right, we need to wrap up this show. This is Right to Survive Radio, and I'm one of your hosts, Lisa Fay, and your other host, Ibrahim Mubarak. We were here with Desiree Rose and Austin and Akita and James and Ree from Boots on the Ground, and I would like to say thank you to all our guests and to our call-in listeners tonight. Rain, you brought up some very valid points. And I want to thank you for sticking with us and hanging in there so long. Please remember, Right to Survive Radio can be heard the second Wednesday of each month at 6 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And if you're interested in learning more, you can always come to a Right to Survive meeting the second and fourth Thursday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. at Sisters of the Road Cafe on the corner of Northwest 6th and Davis. Good night, everybody, and remember to be kind to someone.
Yeah, yeah. gallery in the Tarts and Dukes. You check it out, y'all. Mike Crenshaw. Solid Rice. Portland to Detroit. Indeed. I let the music raise funds for community centers. Start a high school that is soon to be finished. I'm thinking about starting a community garden. Trillions on the wall while the poor people are starving.